I am Planta on the line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. I'm a big fan of the Vancouver Sun columnist Douglas Todd. He's a thoughtful and elegant writer. He recently wrote about a new book, Fathers, a Literary Anthology. Doug described the book as powerful, evocative, and also said that he expects the book will, quote, end up helping many people better comprehend the relationships with their own dads, whatever experiences they might have with them. I just got the book a day or so ago, and with Father's Day coming up in a couple of weeks, this book is a wonderful way to think about our dads, good, bad, or indifferent. Well, not so much on the indifferent, I suppose. Andre Girard joins me now. He edited this collection of essays, poems, as well as a cartoon story in here. The authors represented include Virginia Woolf, Alice Munro, Margaret Atwood, Mordecai Richler, E.B. White, Miriam Taves, Winston Churchill, Leonard Cohen, Sylvia Plath, Dylan Thomas, and many more. It's a great showcase of writing as well as a manual of sorts to understand fathers, fatherhood, life itself. There's much wisdom here. Andre Girard has had many jobs, including commercial fisherman, green chain hand, postal employee, and tutor. This collection was put together by Mr. Girard. He financed it and published it. Patrick Moore is the publisher, which you can find out more about at patrimoirepress.com. Please welcome to the Planta Online program, Andre Girard. Good morning, Mr. Girard.
Good morning, and thank you for having me on the program.
You're very welcome, and thank you for getting a copy of the book to the house a couple of days ago. I guess it was Tuesday, was it? I
can't remember. It was.
Yeah. Well, we booked the interview that day, and I was quite pleased that it came by so quickly. I haven't finished it, obviously, because it's quite a large collection of essays, pieces, poems, and the sort. But I did read your introduction, and I have been sort of dipping in here and there, looking at pieces, or I've been looking at people that interest me. Like, I went straight to Churchill. I'm a bit of an amateur Churchillian. Is that how we should read the book, or do you expect people to read it cover to cover?
No, I do expect people to dip into it. I read anthologies that way myself, and part of my intent was just to lead readers on a journey of exploration. So in the process of putting together the anthology, I discovered a few writers that I'd not known about, world famous though they were, and I also discovered some marvelous books, such as Miriam Taves, for instance, better known as a Canadian novelist, but she's also got a curious book about her father called Swing Low, in which she writes her father's life, but she writes it from the inside. She imagines herself as her father, the speaking voices of the father. You mentioned also that the cartoon piece in the book.
Yeah.
People who are interested in graphic novels or illustrated books would probably take exception with the term cartoon, because it's a very serious form of literature.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the piece in question is from Alison Bechtel, a book called Fun Home, in which she looks at growing up in a house where the father was a closet homosexual, very repressed, but he also ran a funeral home. He was a school teacher, but he was a third-generation undertaker. And so her childhood was rather unconventional in some ways, but also very conventional in others.
Now, what compels one to put a collection like this together? I mean, these are pieces, some of them I'd assume you'd read over the years, that you'd thought about, kept in the back of your head, I guess.
Yes, well, Father's a Literary Anthology really came out of my teaching. I tutor teenage boys mostly, and I had quite a number of students whose fathers were out of the country. They were second language students, and their father was back in China, usually China or Taiwan, providing for the family. But some of the students had trouble appreciating this. You know, they felt abandoned or betrayed, or they just missed their father and were depressed. So I started collecting pieces to read with them and to give them an opportunity to talk talk about their father if they wanted, or to see just how varied the child-father experience could be. And over time, I realized that I had this wonderful collection of pieces.
Do you still teach satellite kids?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
And, you know, satellite or astronaut kids. I continue to work as a tutor, and for me, it's very rewarding because I'm not just tutoring. I'm often a mentor or even a family member to some extent. You know, the relationship is a close one and a rewarding one for me, certainly, and for many of my students who go on to become lifelong friends.
Now, you have these pieces. Was there a willingness to share on their part? Did you find, or?
It took me. Initially, I had hoped to get a major publisher, and the intricacies of the publishing trade are such that you need an agent to get to a major publisher, and agents are not interested in anthologies because they're not money makers. So I had to, gradually I realized that if the book was ever to be completed, I would have to publish it myself. And then I had to establish credibility with the people who had the rights. So I had to pursue publishers or agents or authors, and I just had to be persistent. The permission side of this project took over 2 years before I nailed down the last permission. Also, it was complicated by the fact that permissions are often fragmented. So I wanted world rights, and I had to, for, say, Margaret Atwood, I had to make sure I had the British rights, the Canadian rights, and the American rights, and they were all held separately.
And so some of the authors that you got to talk to, I guess, over the process of this include, like Patrick Lane, for example. Did you deal with him directly?
I did. I did, and he was very supportive at a very early stage. And it was, in fact, the support of writers like Patrick Lane or Rita Dove that encouraged me to stay with it. They saw that the project was worthwhile, and they emailed. Most of the correspondence was by email. And they sent me words of support, and they made their pieces available to me in a way that was much easier than with a major international publisher, where the permissions got very expensive with some of those, because you don't negotiate with Random House. You know, they set the terms, and you accept what's given.
I was just thinking of Patrick the other day. I've talked to him before, and I had a bit of a lengthy correspondence with him a couple years ago. He has a poem at the end of each of his emails, doesn't he?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. He sends a different poem each time you email him, and that's wonderful. And I should say that Patrick was, for me, one of the discoveries of this process. I knew of him as a BC poet, but I had not read his book, There Is a Season, and it is. You know, it's on my desert island list of books.
Right.
It's just a remarkable book, and it too. I mean, it in part deals with the trauma of losing a father through violence at a relatively early age. So it really is a powerful book about healing and about growth.
His I was going to say wife. I don't know if they describe themselves as that. I guess his partner, Lorna Crozier. She has a wonderful book, and the name escapes me at the moment. It's a memoir, and in it, I interviewed her for it a couple years ago when it came out. There's a piece about dealing with her own father in there, or not a piece, I should say. It deals with her father because it's a memoir about her life, her growing up in Saskatchewan. I was just thinking of her the other day, too, because her interview that we did a couple years ago, that's still getting a lot of traffic on the site, surprisingly enough. Well, not surprisingly, because she's a great writer herself. What was your own relationship with your father like?
The relationship continues. My father's 91 now, and it was a very positive one. He emigrated from Europe. He fought during the war and started a new life in North America, and found work as a factory worker, work that was quite unfulfilling, but he did it for family, and he was always there for us as kids, and he's still there for us today. You know, he's a patriarch, a role model. And the anthology, I don't think, came out of feelings about my father so much as I've mentioned it. It was more because of my tutoring and my students. And also, I came at it from the other side. It came out of perhaps more my own experiences as a father. My problems and difficulties that I had as a in my own parenting and how I dealt with my children. And so in reading and thinking about these pieces, I was looking for ways of becoming a better father, not particularly looking at reassessing my relationship with my own father.
And the relationship with the father, that changes. I mean, I read that in the book, that how you feel about your dad, say, when you're 7, is different than when he's 91, say.
Yes. You know, the father is different, you are different, but also the stories you tell yourself are different. I mean, we create our lives through our stories, and some people, when you read some of these essays, you see that some people have turned their fathers into monsters. They've demonized them, you know, and they use them as a whipping post, if you like, or scapegoats. Other people, there are a couple interesting pieces. Mary Gordon, for example, she created a father who was a saint, and it was only when she became a young adult that she discovered that her father was, although of Jewish origin, was an anti-Semite, was a low-level pornographer, had written speeches for Joe McCarthy, and she had to reassess her whole relationship with her father. He had died when she was 7, but he was an important part of who she was. And she had to also, in a sense, rediscover who she was, because she had defined herself through her father. She had become a writer, for instance. And that process even led her to dig up her father and reinter him at a further point. So fathers can obsess some people to an amazing degree.
And when we read about these sort of fraught relationships, these relationships that are not so pleasant, not so good, not ideal even, what do you think we can learn from them, other than not to emulate the bad parts, I guess?
Well, what I learned was a lot of it is, if you like, accidental, you know, and I've learned that as a father, you know, the things that I do as a father, or anybody does as a father, you always try to do your best if you're conscientious and caring, but the results are sometimes surprising, and how you and the child interact is as much a result of chemistry, heredity, of accident. And what you take away from these pieces is that, you know, you do the best you can, and your role as a father, or, you know, we could also be using the word mother here, as a parent, your role as a parent is a critical one. You are trying to launch your child into the world, give them skills, give them tools. You want to give them a sense of self-worth. You give them all the love that you know how to give. But in the end, what they make of their lives is a matter of so many different factors. You know, if you've given them the love and the self-esteem, you've given them the platform. And after that, chances are that they'll appreciate it, but who knows? You know, it's a bit of a potluck.
How many kids do you have?
I have two.
Two?
And they're, my son is 20 and my daughter 22, and you know, I consider both of them good friends at this stage of our father-child relationship, though we have had moments where I wouldn't say bitter enemies, but we've had some real struggles at various points of the development of our relationship.
Have they read the book?
Yes, they've I would read essays to them at various points, and the introductions and the biographies that I spent a lot of time finding interesting facts and polishing them and helping future readers, you know, giving them points of entry into these stories. They listened to them, and they gave me feedback, too. So in some cases, they are very much part of those introductions. Their feedback was valuable to me.
And how do you think they view you as a dad? I mean, do you think about that? I mean, is that the measure, say, if you were a good dad or a bad dad at the end of the day?
I believe they view me very, very positively. And yes, I want their respect, I want their love, but at the same time, I often realize that some of my decisions and some of my actions are not necessarily going to please them, and you know, that's what we wrestle with as parents all the time, is you know, we have phrases for it, perhaps, you know, tough love or whatever you want to use, and the decisions you make from your adult perspective are not necessarily the decisions that the child wants to hear. And again, my children will, as they move forward, you know, their understanding of me has changed a lot, and it will change again as I age, or once I'm dead too. Though, you know, my mother died about 4 years ago, and she's now a very different mother to me than when she was alive, but she's still very much my mother, and I keep revisiting her, and she's with me constantly, and I perhaps appreciate her all the more now. And one of the things I've done, incidentally, is I've created a website with additional material. It's patrimoirpress.com, and on it I've posted an area for tributes to fathers, to mothers, or to friends. And the mother tribute is by Wallace Stegner, a brilliant essay that he wrote when he was 80 years old, and he called it Letter Much Too Late. And he's writing to his mother, who died some 50 years before, and he's expressing appreciation and sharing what she means to him now at this moment in his life. And it's a very moving, powerful essay. Stegner is a brilliant writer who deserves to be better known.
Your website, patrimoirpress.com, right? You have a blog there, too.
That's correct. Yeah. I blog on the site, and there are excerpts from the book there, too, the biographies, for instance. And in writing the biographies, I tried, they're what I call thumbnail biographies. They're only about a paragraph. But I tried to move beyond just dry statistics. I tried to include father stories and a sense of the writer's achievements. So it's in a few quotations when possible as well.
The perception of fathers in literature, popular culture especially, that hasn't been a good one. Fathers have tended to get a bad rap, haven't they?
Excuse me. Yes, well,
I mean, compared to mothers, I mean, you know, it seems to be glowing when people talk about their mothers.
Well, I start the introduction to my book with a quotation by Margaret Atwood, and she says, all fathers except mine are invisible in daytime. Daytime is ruled by mothers, and fathers come out at night. Darkness brings home fathers with their real, unspeakable power. There is more to fathers than meets the eye. So this is from her novel Cat's Eye, but it expresses, I think, how we have traditionally viewed fathers. You know, they're slightly mysterious, authoritarian often. They're not in the childhood domestic circle to the extent that the mother is, even today. You know, that's changing, and in some families that's no longer true. But the father is mysterious, and he is perhaps more authoritarian. And I think children are, generally speaking, somewhat more conflicted about fathers. And in putting this anthology together, one of the things, as I proceeded with this, I thought, oh, I should do a book of matrimoires, of essays about mothers at some point. And while there are such essays, there is not nearly the wealth of mother essays as there are of father essays. Not yet, anyhow. You know, and I think that says something about the need that people have to come to terms with their fathers, to make sense of their fathers. Mothers, perhaps, we take them more for granted, or have done in the past.
And so with Father's Day coming up, I've thought that this is a great collection to think about fathers and Father's Day especially. Is that how you see the book? I mean, it's a great way for say, the book to get bought. Is that what your goal was?
Certainly my goal was to have it out in time for Father's Day, but I think the book is also timeless in many ways. Mm-hmm. You know, if you lose a father, for instance, a lot of these essays are coming to terms with the loss of a father. They're learning, expressing grief and learning to handle grief and to move through grief, for instance. And also there's a lot there, as I've already said, for fathers to learn about their own role. You know, it's not just something that a book for a child to pick up and give to their father. And it's a book for all of us to think also about how we construct our identities. And above and beyond that, it's a book of wonderful pieces of literature. You know, to move us back to our starting point, it's a book that you can dip into and make discoveries. You can discover Churchill as a writer rather than perhaps a historical figure that most of us have in our minds, and realize just how charming he could be as a writer and skilled. You can discover Philip Roth, whose book about the father, whose patrimoire, which he titles Patrimony, is one of the best books I've ever read. You know, I knew about Roth. I'd read Goodbye Columbus. I'd read a couple of his other books and enjoyed some of them, liked others less well. And then when I came across Patrimony, there was so much for me to learn, and I will continue to learn a lot from that book.
Audrey, this is a fine achievement. Congratulations on this book, and good luck with it.
Thank you so much. Much appreciated.
You're very welcome. The book is called Fathers, a Literary Anthology. Patrimoire Press is its publisher. Check out the website at patrimoirepress.com for more information on how to get the book. Amazon.com has it, and of course, the fine shops in town have it. There's a list here. Oscar Books at West Broadway, Pulp Fiction on Main Street, Lady Sports at 3545 West 4th. Andre Girard, the editor of the book, on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plata.